Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm happy to have as my guest Edmund White, whose new novel, A Saint from Texas, took me over. It really amazed me. It's several kinds of novel in one. It begins as an American comic novel set in Texas. Its heroines are two twin sisters, identical twins. One of them moves to Paris to be part of the world of brilliant, frivolous speech and fashion. The other of them becomes a nun. She's serious about religion. And the book, in a sense, is examining the gap between the human being as a meat animal and the human being as a Holy Spirit. Is that a significant gap for you, Edmund? It doesn't strike me as being like you.
Well, I was always an atheist, but I've always been intrigued by religion, and I called myself a mystical atheist, whatever that is. So in this book, while I was planning it, I realized I was going to write about the Baroness. But then I thought, oh, I've written so much about Paris, frivolous Paris, that I should write about something serious. Like, what about a saint? And that's something I know nothing about. So I read tons of devotional literature and really tried to get into the mind of a saint.
You not only get into the mind of a saint, you get into her mind via the mind of her unsaintly identical twin sister, who is also trying to understand what it is that it takes one to become saintly. Now, tell me, just because I'm going to go right to my bookshelves, when you were reading the literature of saintliness, what most appealed to you?
Well, I liked Simone Weil, W-E-I-L.
Of course.
The French mystic. I don't think they've actually made her into a saint yet, but they should. And I read a lot of her. But also Saint Teresa of Lisieux, and Saint Teresa of Avila, and a bunch of others.
A Saint from Texas begins at 120 miles an hour as a comic novel about girls from Texas who are growing up, pledging sorority, enjoying the advantages of oil money. Their mother has died. A new mother has stepped in, and she wants these girls to have all of the golden, indeed platinum, advantages that a girl can have. And she convinces their rather chintzy father to spend money on their clothing. They're wearing Dior in a small Texas oil town. And they are amazing when together they move to Dallas and get to stack themselves up against other girls. This opening is like nothing else in your work. It's so funny. It made me laugh out loud. And if you're listening right now and you want something that's going to astound you by how quickly it moves and how funny it is, while you pick up Edmund White, my guest's new novel, A Saint from Texas. It becomes like a Balzac novel, then like a Stendhal novel. It becomes a little bit Flaubertian. Did you know the range you were going to manage to cover?
Well, I never thought about it in those terms, although the writers you mention are the key writers for me. If you add in Henry Green and Evelyn Waugh, but I love all those French writers. And while I was writing this book, I was reading The Charterhouse of Parma and by Stendhal, and I was reading Memoirs from Beyond the Tomb by Chateaubriand.
I didn't know that people still could write like this. It's so deeply felt and so, I don't know what to call it, from the core of what it means to be alive. Both of these sisters, in the course of their lives, discover that they are identical, even though they think they aren't. For instance, each in her own way liked to sleep with other women. In fact, this may be the most extraordinary lesbian novel by a gay man I've ever read. Where did that come from?
I don't know. I just, I have a woman who works for me called Mercy, and she's absolutely adorable, and she's Filipino. So I sort of based the character on her as the love object of the nun. And the Baroness likes to play around and do shocking things. And so she's kind of bisexual, I guess. And although even the nun, it sort of falls in love with her confessor, but it's unconsummated. Anyway, the novel I'm writing now, I'm 200 pages into, is very polyamorous, and everybody sleeps with everybody.
I don't remember that from Pollyanna.
No, polyamorous.
Oh, polyamorous. I thought you said Pollyanna-ish.
No.
Well, A Saint from Texas begins with the revelation that the two women, the two young ladies, the two girls, their mother reads fanzines, and she doesn't know how to pronounce the names that she finds in the fanzines. So what are the two girls' names and how do they pronounce them?
They're called Wyvon and Wyvette.
Yes, and by the time they are growing up, Yvonne and Yvette have entered worlds in which it's perfectly inappropriate for them to mispronounce in this way, especially the sister who moves to Paris, Yvonne. And so she does want and does marry royalty. Now, I have to tell you, Edmund, I'd forgotten the novel about the woman who wants to marry royalty. I know the novel about the woman who marries wealth. Henry James wrote enough of them. But the poor, indigent, ugly, surly man who Yvonne marries only offers her a title. She will be, as his wife, Baroness, but that's about it. Did you have a good time making a character that mean?
I did. That was quite an American tradition called the bartered bride. My money for your title. And some of the men were decent, but some were pretty awful. One of Proust's models was a guy, Boni de Castellan, was somebody who was pretty frightful to his wife and ran through all of her money and was never faithful. And so, you know, if I read a lot of devotional literature for one of my characters, I read a lot of scandalous biographies for the other one.
Yes, I'm talking to Edmund White about his fantastic and very emotional new book, A Saint from Texas. This woman suffers not just her husband, but his parents, and they're all redoing the family castle, not mansion, but castle, from stem to stern. It's an incredibly expensive proposition, while she mostly stays in Paris, where she mostly stays with her two children. What she becomes in Paris is the mistress of a brilliant musical salon, where the salon is based every Sunday on modern, postmodern classical music, so loud and so noisy that only the bourgeois will complain. The avant-garde love it. Yes?
Right, exactly. When she starts the musical salon with an Italian aristocrat who is her lover, he says, do you want it to be kind of easy on the ears, or is it supposed to be really hard on the ears? And she says, well, what is more chic? And he said, hard on the ears. So she goes for that.
Well, she discovers that all of the things she learned in Texas about monogamy and sex are being contradicted by her experiences in Paris, and she has to learn all afresh how to be a sexual being. And it's fascinating because her twin sister, there in America in a convent, is learning how not to be, although she is falling in love with her bishop and he with her. It is unconsummated, but this book seems to have been written on a set of principles of oppositions that, in other words, opposites that never meet, yes?
Well, I think, though, the nun sister does evidence a lot of sensuality. I mean, it's all mixed in her mind with holiness. But I think she does feel the sensual pull of her girlfriend and of the bishop. In a way, they change places. I mean, of course, there are obvious differences between the ways they live. But I think that their relative isolation within themselves, I mean, I think they're not terribly... superficially, they're social, but they're pretty remote within themselves, and I think that's a similarity. There are other similarities, but there are also, of course, great differences. This American woman who is also married an aristocrat, she discovers that that woman was a lover of her husband, Yvonne's husband. She finds out that a beautiful ring that her husband had given her that she thought she'd lost, the other woman, the lover, is now wearing.
And the lover has the good sense to give it back to her so that when she's wearing it, seeing it again truly shocks her husband.
Right.
You pull so many things out of your hat, Edmund, in this novel. Even as it grew tragic and, in a sense, the passion becomes moribund, I never wanted to stop reading it. I've read it 3 times now, and each time I read it in a 2-day period. It was an extraordinarily compelling novel. I'm very curious. It says in the author's note in the book that your own favorite of your many novels is Hotel de Dream, and I wondered why.
I think it has the best structure. It's rather short, and it has a lot of incident packed into it. And I like the character of the Stephen Crane's wife, Cora. I was so sad to stop writing her. When I rarely get attached to characters sentimentally. But I did get very attached to Cora. And I don't know, I guess I felt the book was kind of like a Rubik cube in the sense that it had many different ways of configuring itself.
Well, it's fascinating because I learned that many years ago, the woman, and it was a woman, who wrote the screenplay of True Grit, Marguerite Roberts, also wrote a screenplay about Stephen Crane called Hotel de Dream, and she, too, wanted to tell that story. Her screenplay, although it contains a filmed version of the story, The Open Boat, does not bring in Henry James or the many literary complications and sexual complications in your novel. Her screenplay was never produced. But when I was working in development, I wanted them to cast Meryl Streep in the role of... She was a madam, yes?
Yes, that's right. She ran a house of prostitution in Florida called Hotel de Dream. It had belonged to a Madame Dream, D-R-E-M-E, and she changed it to D-R-E-A-M when she bought it.
Henry James's belief in your novel, and probably in life, that Maggie, a girl of the streets, should never have been written. That a book about a prostitute like Maggie, a girl of the streets. Now, of course, James, who was perhaps the most famous withholder of his own sexuality that ever lived in American writing, James, of course, cannot abide Stephen Crane's writing this book. So those of you, when you finish A Saint from Texas, don't forget Hotel de Dream. It's a novel that you will be surprised and entertained by. Now tell me, Edmund, both of these books contain a crucial interest in hidden, restrained sexualities. Talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, I think a nun has to probably conceal her sexuality. Although my sister, who's a lesbian, used to meet a nun on the beach in Michigan, and the nun would be wearing a very flashy swimsuit under her gown. And they would romp all day, and then the nun would go back in her robes and go back to her convent. So I don't know. I think... there are more swingers in convents than we imagine. but I don't know. I guess I like the idea of hidden sex. In a way, gay liberation took all the fun out of that, because it's true that I came out in the 1950s, and in that period, you would just gradually introduce words into the conversation like gay or queer, but in their normal sense, and see if the other person picked up on it. And you know, like you'd say, oh, I'm feeling so gay tonight, or yes, she's a queer fish, or whatever. But just these, you would push forward your checkers to see if the other person wanted to play. And
that's brilliant.
And there were other ways of alluding to your sexuality, and you would see what if you could maybe smoke the other person out or not, because it was all very dangerous and coy, you might say. But you know, if you'd arrive at a party and they were playing Mabel Mercer music constantly, and everybody was drinking martinis and maybe occasionally slipping pronouns from he to she, that was a very good clue that you were in the right place.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Edmund White about his new book, A Saint from Texas. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Edmund White about his new book, A Saint from Texas, the story of twin sisters who, within an expansive reality, manifest their captivating selves. At a certain point in this book, Yvonne in Paris recognizes that her sister, the nun, is still more sensual than she is. And it's kind of fascinating to see the play of sensuality throughout this book. They're not in competition with one another. They have different natures, and they are going to, life has given them the gift of being able to see who they are and how far that will take them, yeah?
Yeah, and they have identical bodies, which must count for something. Even the wiring of their brains must be very similar. And, you know, I wanted to mention, my parents are both Texans, and I lived in Texas, in Dallas as a child. And so I was very happy to see a review written by a Texan for a Texas publication saying that I'd gotten everything right about Texas. I think I've made a dozen mistakes, but I think basically I got things right.
Yes, I think I read that in Texas Monthly. Now tell me, you know, over your long career as a novelist, is there anything you've gotten wrong that you still regret?
Well, no, but I did something which I guess most writers don't do because the audience thought it was so strange. I was in Minnesota, and I read a story to the group that I'd written about going on a camping trip as a teenager through the Quetico Lake country. And I said, you know, this story hasn't been published yet, and if I got anything wrong, tell me, please, tell me. So, like, hands timidly go up, and they say, well, you wouldn't shoot a loon, and they're inedible anyway because they're all oil and bones. You know, and anyway, they're a national treasure, so you can't shoot them. And I had many corrections like that I was so grateful for, because I was able to correct everything before it was published. So I think it's important to listen to your first readers. And I know, like, John Irving is a good friend of mine, and he sends out his books to like a dozen reliable readers before they're published, because he wants people to catch the mistakes he might have made.
You've written a novel that begins in Texas, moves to Paris and then other parts of France, moves to Colombia, where the sister becomes a nun. But I think of this, as I read, I thought of this plot as being an American-French novel that you really had written. I honestly don't know how. It's so good. It's so engrossing. It's so involving that you'd written an old-fangled French novel, the kind that, because of affairs and sensuality and secrecy, the kind of novel you can't put down. Was that because you lived for so long in Paris that you were able to do so?
Well, I lived in Paris for 16 years, and I wrote for Vogue magazine. So I met a lot of these people, and I had a French lover who eventually died of AIDS, but who was a member of the Knights of Malta and so on. So I got to hear a lot about these stories. To be in the Knights of Malta, six of your eight grandparents have to be aristocrats.
It was amazing. We go to a annual party of the Knights of Malta with your French sister narrator, and well, my mind just boggled. I had never been at a Knights of Malta meeting, and it was it was fascinating. I want to tell my listeners that we're taping in our two apartments, mine in Los Angeles, Edmund's in New York. So if you hear unusual or inappropriate sounds, you'll know why. We're doing the best we can. And thank you, Edmund, for joining us. You know, you've become, this wasn't always true, as you know, but you've become one of my favorite writers, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for your enthusiasm and your understanding.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. You can even listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to Bookworm show collaborators Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, and technical director Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Sarah Schoenlin Bynum is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.